You're listening to The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. According to the annual Chapman University Survey of American Fears, Americans are becoming more afraid. Corrupt government officials, climate change, not having enough money, all that ranks in the top 10. Another survey that tracks Google searches says among Illinoisans, the top phobia is public speaking. It's almost as if we need a guide or a manual, if you will, for fighting fear. Good news. Our next guest has us covered. With me now to talk about how fear holds us back and how we can conquer it is Levy Ajayi-Jones. She's a noted public speaker. You might have seen her popular TED Talk called Get Comfortable with Being Uncomfortable. She's a writer. You may know her blog, awesomelylovely.com. And she's a best-selling author. Her new book out yesterday is called Professional Troublemaker, The Fear Fighter Manual. Levy is also an Illinoisan, growing up in Chicago and later attending the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. Levy, thanks so much for joining us today on The 21st.
Thank you so much for having me.
Listeners, we want to invite you into our conversation. If you have a question for Levy or a comment, give us a call. 800-222-9455 is the number. That's 800-222-9455. You can also tweet us at 21st Show. So before we jump into the book, for people who may not be as familiar with your biography, you were born in Nigeria, came to Chicago as a child. Can you talk about that journey and your early life as a Nigerian immigrant in Chicago?
Yes. Coming to the United States at 9 was absolutely a culture shock. And then going to Chicago, where it's cold, absolutely shocked my system. But as kids do, we adapt. So, you know, Chicago has been home since. And I went to the University of Illinois for college, where my major when I started was psychology pre-med. But a D that I got in chemistry 101 ended that pre-med dream. I quickly was like, yeah, dead the dream. That's done.
You know, I'm sorry to interrupt you. I had the same thing happen to me at the U of I. It was a early chemistry class that I would have been an astrophysicist today had it gone better. So I feel you on that. Sorry to interrupt.
Chemistry is where dreams go to die.
It is.
Dreams go to die. And that's okay, because some dreams, you know what? They should go die, because I would have been a horrific, horrific doctor. I probably should not have even thought I should be a doctor, because I don't even like blood or hospitals. So who told me I should have been a doctor? Everybody, because they thought I was smart. But the gift of that D is that same semester, I actually started my blog, my first blog, because I was peer pressured into doing it by my friends. And what ended up happening is I never stopped blogging. It's been 18 years since, and my blog took on a life of its own. I am now, an author, a podcaster, a speaker, and a fear fighter.
So I want to begin. You begin your book with a dedication to your Nigerian grandmother, whom you cite as a real inspiration in your life. Can you talk about her a bit?
Yes. At the center of my book, outside of myself, is my grandmother, Funmilayo Faloyin. And she was incredible, because she's a troublemaker who I saw growing up. And what I meant by troublemaker is, like, she took up space without apology. She allowed herself to be celebrated. And as a woman, a Black woman, an immigrant, she had so many reasons to not take up the space. She had so many reasons to cower, but she didn't let it. She didn't let the world tell her she wasn't enough. And she always spoke her mind. She loved people fiercely. And she was just such an incredible spirit. And she's who I realized I was watching all my life. She's a person who I realized gave me permission to be myself. And she's made significant impact on me.
I wonder if you have like a specific, you know, anecdote or story that you share with people about her that exemplifies that idea of the professional troublemaker spirit.
You know, my grandmother constantly allowed herself to be celebrated, and celebrate herself more than anybody else. And anytime she'd go to church, because her church loved her, and whenever she would get to church, they would actually stop the music and announce that she had arrived at church. And then she would dance down the aisles and take her time doing it. And it's so funny because I see that and saw that and realize how much sometimes when people give us compliments, we'll go, no, no, no. What, this little thing that I'm wearing? Oh, no big deal. And we try to like turn it around. What she did was the opposite. You didn't just give her a compliment. She reveled in the compliment. What? Thank you. What else did you like? And it's so interesting because I was like, when did we start learning that it wasn't okay to be complimented? When did we start turning it back to other people? When did we stop really allowing ourselves to be celebrated? And she definitely allowed herself to be celebrated above and beyond.
You're right. It is so hard. I mean, I even feel arrogant saying, you know, taking compliment, because now I'm talking about getting complimented, but it is hard to take a compliment. Is that something you had to train yourself to do to sort of
no.
How to, no, you're good with compliments.
Because I watched her. When she got a compliment, she goes, thank you. And she'd smile. She wasn't constantly afraid of like, oh my gosh, now I have to be looked at as arrogant. If receiving a compliment is arrogance, then what does actually owning how amazing you are? That must be intense arrogance. I don't think it's arrogant to say, thank you. I appreciate that. I think that's just receiving gracefully. But we've been told that to say we're actually good at something is to be arrogant. And I don't think that's real. I think that's false. Why and who wins when I diminish how amazing I am? Who wins when I tell you that, oh no, my book is just okay. It's all right. No, my book is amazing, or I'm an amazing speaker. To say it confidently is not arrogance, it's a fact. And to think about how we move through the world where we're like feeling somehow inadequate constantly, and we're thinking our job is to be self-deprecating to a fault. Literally nobody wins, because now who believes how amazing we are if we're constantly saying we're not good?
All right, we need to take a break here. We're going to come back and continue our conversation with Levi Ajayi-Jones. She's a speaker and a writer. Her new book out now is called Professional Troublemaker, The Fear Fighter Manual. It's about how to confront and overcome the fear that holds us back. If you want to join our conversation, maybe you have a question or a comment, you can do that at 800-222-9455. Again, the number to call in is 800-222-9455. You can also always tweet us at 21st Show. That's at 21st Show. More in our conversation with Levi Ajayi-Jones coming up after a short break. You're listening to The 21st. We'll be right back. This is The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We're speaking with Levi Ajayi-Jones. She's a speaker, a writer. Her new book is called Professional Troublemaker, The Fear Fighter Manual. And before the break, we were talking about fear and confidence and accepting compliments. And Levi, you write in the book that this is a book you wish you had at a number of points in your life. And you've already talked about you were going to be a doctor and then you know, had to decide to shift and pursue your calling as a writer. And you've also talked about struggling with imposter syndrome. And I understand you turned down a TED Talk twice before saying yes. The book is about fear. Can you tell us how fear holds us back in life in the context of maybe when it held you back in life?
Yeah, let's talk about that TED Talk, actually. So my TED Talk now has 5.6 million views. And I turned it down twice, because I was afraid that I wasn't ready for that stage. I was afraid that I was gonna bomb, that like, you know what, I didn't have enough time to dedicate to what it would take to not bomb on that stage. And really what it was imposter syndrome, what it was me not owning my power in that moment. See, that takes us back to that whole diminishing. It wasn't that I didn't think I was a good speaker, but for some reason I felt that stage was big and that I wasn't there yet. But the third time I was asked to do it that year, I was about to turn it down again. And a friend of mine was like, no, you have to do this. I will not let you say no. And what she did in that moment was she loaned me power and courage that I didn't have for myself. And I think about how I did the talk and how since it's been done 3 years ago, every day I get some type of a note from somebody who says, I watched your TED talk. This is what it did for me. Here's how it emboldened me. Here's the action I took because of it. And it had me really thinking about how often we've all let fear stop us from doing what we're supposed to do. How often have we said no to yes opportunities because we're afraid? And even me, who shows up bold, who is in the world as a professional troublemaker, being able to be honest about it was important because I want to normalize this idea. We're all going to be afraid in these different moments, but what matters is when we move forward. And it was really important to write this book because, yeah, I wanted this book. This book would have come in really handy for me when I was afraid to say yes to TED. It would have come in really handy when I was afraid to call myself a writer because I thought that title was big. This is the book that I needed then, that I will still need in moments when I'm like, ooh, how do I make sure that I show up better? And I think for me, it's one of the things I try to do is I try to create work that I want to consume, work that I want and need. And whenever I do that, it wins because that means somebody else needs it. Somebody else wants it. And that's what I did with this book. I wrote the book that I want, the book that I need, with the hopes that it helps somebody else.
Fear is obviously something that's been running rampant in our society in the last year for a number of reasons, including the pandemic. Mm-hmm. I mean, pandemic fear is justifiable in a lot of ways. What is the value of fear, and why do you think fighting it is so important?
The value of fear is that when it's really necessary, like when fear comes in handy, it keeps us from doing things that are physically harmful, right? Fear keeps us from putting our hands in fire. It keeps us from jumping out of a plane without a parachute. That's when fear is real. It keeps us from leaving the house without a mask now. But when it's that same energy, that same emotion is what keeps us from speaking the truth in the rooms we're in, having tough conversations. It's what keeps us from, asking for the promotion or the raise. So yes, fear is absolutely necessary in certain pieces. And in other ways, it is going to stifle us.
Okay, so let's dig into the book a little bit now. So it's broken up into three sections on how to be a professional troublemaker. There's be, say, and do. Let's start with be. There's a lot of advice in each section, but obviously we do have time constraints in our live radio program here. So one thing that stood out here is the idea of writing yourself an oriki, if I'm saying that correctly. This is a Yoruba oriki tradition that it's kind of a personal mantra to be spoken or sung. Can you talk about this?
Yes. I think an oriki is part of traditional Yoruba land in our culture, in that it's something that ties you to your ancestry. It's something that reminds you of who and whose you are, and it gasses you up. I call it a standing ovation for your spirit, and it is so affirming, and it's something that I feel like everybody needs. And I borrow from Game of Thrones in that what Daenerys, how they introduced Daenerys was in itself an oriki. You know, they called her the mother of dragons, you know, mother of the unsullied, breaker of chains. That thing is powerful. If you do that, write one for yourself. I wrote one for myself because I'm like, listen, in the moments when somebody tells you you're not good enough, or they try to insult you or tell you something about you that you know is not true, read it back to yourself. And it reminds you of how amazing you are. Back to that whole thing. It's not about you being arrogant, but the world spends a lot of time telling us that we don't deserve good things, that we should somehow feel bad for wanting life of ease, that we should constantly bend. And what we have to understand is there's not enough things telling us how amazing we are. There's not enough that's telling us that we belong in the room. So the Origi is an affirmation.
I wonder if you would, would you feel comfortable sharing some of your personal one, or is that something you want to keep close?
Repeat what you just said.
Would you feel comfortable sharing a little bit of your personal Origi, or is that something you want to keep close?
Well, the Origi that I wrote for myself?
Yeah, exactly.
Yes. Okay. I will read that to you real quick. It's in the book. It's in chapter one. And in the book, I also put a formula for you to come up with your own. So I wrote one for myself. Lovey of House Jones, first of her name, assassin of the alphabet, bestseller of books, conqueror of copy, dame of diction, critic of culture, sorceress of side eyes, eater of jollof rice, rocker of fierce shoes, taker of stages, Nigerian noble and Chi-Town creator. It requires you to throw humility away. It requires you to big yourself in ways that might make you shy. But I think it's necessary. Do it.
Listeners, if you're just tuning in, that is Lovey Ajayi-Jones. We're talking about her new book, which is Professional Troublemaker, The Fear Fighter Manual. It's all about how to confront and overcome fear that might be holding us back. As I mentioned a few minutes ago, the book is in three sections. The next section of your book is Say, and you write that we've got to say what's difficult, even when our voices shake. I'm curious how people can, maybe how this can help people tackle issues of advocacy in the workplace. This is something that's on a lot of people's minds these days, mm-hmm. equal mm-hmm. pay, diversity, and inclusion. How should we be professional troublemakers in our work without getting fired?
Here's the thing is, you can tell thoughtful truths. When you are sitting in the room during the meeting and the campaign idea comes up and the idea is not great, your silence is a bit of a betrayal of your obligation. Let them know, hey, we should rethink this campaign. Here's why I think it should be a little bit more thoughtful, or here's why I don't think it would go as well as we wanted to, or here's why it doesn't fit our mission. Saying the thing is important. If that gets you fired when you are being thoughtful, then you actually just learned something. That's not the place for you. To be fired for being a thoughtful disruptor, a thoughtful truth teller, it's not the place. And a lot of companies are not the place to be thoughtful truth tellers, disruptors, because they've silenced or punished their professional troublemakers. Those companies, and I hope those bosses see my book, feel convicted by it and fix it and start celebrating the troublemakers instead. Like, I really hope they do. And if you are the person who wants to be a troublemaker internally and you want to say the tough things, use the three questions that I use to ask myself when it's time to say the tough things. And if the answer is yes to all three, say it and let the chips fall. And the first question is, do I mean it? This thing that I'm going to say, is it just because I want to hear my voice, or do I actually mean it? Two, can I defend it? If I am challenged on it, can I back it up, right? And then three, can I say thoughtfully? Because how you say it also matters. All of this is not a guarantee that it's going to go perfect and everyone's going to love what you just said, but it's risk mitigation. All of this is to make sure you're doing your part, which is all you can do. How everybody else receives it is up to them. But again, if you somehow get in trouble for challenging an idea or a person in a thoughtful way, then that place is probably not a place that welcomes disruption. And that place is probably not going to thrive.
So far we've talked about be and say, and the last section of the book is do. you recommend here that people, quote, get a Nigerian friend. Can you talk about that?
Yes. So getting a Nigerian friend, I put that because I think it's just everybody needs a Nigerian person in their life. I am biased because Nigerian. We just have a lot of audacity. We have a lot of gumption. And I think that energy is something good to have around you. You need somebody who's going to be like, oh my God, you're amazing. That's how we roll. Culturally, we are a very loud people. We are boisterous. We laugh with our whole body. We are very expressive. And I think that type of energy is good for us to have. And especially in a world that tells you very quickly, you're too much, you know, you're too loud, you're too this. You need people who normalizes that, who will normalize being expressive, who will normalize having passion, and who won't apologize for it. So yeah, get you a Nigerian friend.
We only have a few minutes left in our conversation. I also want to ask about something. You alluded to this earlier, talking about trying to be a doctor earlier in life. And you talk about firing yourself and also being okay with not being good at something. When should we fire ourselves?
Fire yourself when the thing sucks the joy out your spirit. The thing that you have to do that is just like, I hate it so much. Fire yourself. It's not for you to do. You don't actually have to do it.
The last thing I want to ask you about is this book is about looking inward, conquering our own fear. Can you talk about how that relates? This is a year, though, with the pandemic, with the fight for racial equality in America. This is a year when people are also thinking a lot about community. Can you talk briefly, just in the minute or so we have left, about the relationship between working on ourselves and how that lifts up everyone?
Yeah, we have to be troublemakers in our own lives before we can look at it outside. You know, it's that whole thing. We can't be loud on social media about social change, but not have real conversations with the people we know and can touch and can text, the people that we actually have direct access to are our platforms. We are our own platforms. Who we are out loud has to be who we are in private. So yeah, you do have to actually do that work within yourself first before you can look outward.
We're going to have to leave it there. Our conversation with Levi Ajayi Jones. Her latest book out now is called Professional Troublemaker, The Fear Fighter Manual. Levi, thanks so much for being with us today on the 21st.
Thank you so much for having me.
And that is all the time we have for today. Tomorrow, we are planning to bring you an interview with Illinois U.S. Senator Dick Durbin as the U.S. Senate is considering another round of COVID relief. If you have questions you want us to put to the senator, you can always leave us a voicemail. The number there is 217-300-2121. That's 217-300-2121. We might just play it on air. Our program is produced by Anna Casey and Ryan Wild. Chantal Vaca is our engagement producer. Our interns are Zainab Qureshi and Briel Skullark. Technical direction and engineering comes from Jason Croft and Steve Mork. Reginald Hardwick is our news director. Thank you to the band Public Access for our theme music. You can get a podcast of our show. We're on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, NPR One. Just search for The 21st. You can also find a link at our website, 21stshow.org. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening.